Welcome to the Tech Talk Show, an hour of news, views, and discussion. Well, welcome to the show. I'm Steve Griffiths and I'm joined by Dan Hawkes. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Steve. How you doing?
Great, mate. Last show before Christmas, so really can't wait.
Have you done all your shopping?
I have, actually. And in the news, my first thing is top 10 tech gifts for Christmas.
Oh, fantastic.
And I have seen the perfect gift for me.
Have you?
It is a combined toaster and egg poacher. Oh. So you put your toast in and it will poach your egg at exactly the right timings for the perfect breakfast.
That's fantastic.
And obviously, being Internet of Things, you can operate it from your bed, so you can turn it on via whatever Wi-Fi, or you could be in a different country and operate it, obviously. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Anyway, what would be your favourite tech gift?
Tech gift? Well, Internet of Things is looking pretty hot at the moment, so anything that would stop all the hacking of...
Yeah, big story about that, actually. Yeah, people bombarding other websites using Internet of Things because their security systems aren't as strong as some of the other stuff.
That's right, yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, Lorne, I'm joined by Lorne. Lorne, what would be your favourite or top 10 tech gift? What would you want?
Well, I've been dying for a drone, and I saw one yesterday that was about the size of a fly. So you wonder what you could spy on and things like that.
Did it have a camera? Cool.
Did it? No, it didn't, but you know, it did in my mind.
Okay, and Nick, what would you want?
Yeah, I don't want to repeat the same thing, but the drone would be awesome.
I know,
particularly for the video, because I think, you know, that's a big thing for us, and if we can get some amazing footage.
We love a drone on this show.
Yeah, we've had a few in, actually, and there's a really good company based in the UK that make them, and they're breaking into the HD market, but the price point is coming down all the time. So, yeah, really, really good.
As long as you can fly them, I think that's it.
Yeah, the thing is, this thing had a bit of a mind of its own, and we tried to fly it indoors, and it didn't go well.
It bounced well, though, didn't it?
Well, sure, we only borrowed it. We didn't buy it.
I breed drones, actually. Keep bees.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh,
fantastic. So in the summer, we have thousands of them, and then they all get kicked out of the hive in October.
Where do they go?
They get... killed.
Oh, do they? Only
they
last,
die.
They last the season.
You should
come on our sister program, the Food Talk Show. Anyway, Dan, tell us what other news you've got.
So the main bit of news I heard today was the government's announced investing $440 million in the rollout of superfast broadband to 600,000 odd sort of premises, they're saying, but looks like it's going to be sort of mainly homes and businesses, all in those remote areas.
I did hear the radio coming in of some bloke droning on, back on drones, obviously, about why should the government be spending this money? Of course it should be spending this money.
Absolutely.
Because we need to link up the rural areas so that actually it does promote working in rural areas and actually make sure people can be connected regardless of where they are.
Yeah, I know a bit about that. In fact, it's going to be more than that. It's going to be over $1 billion that's invested because it's being match funded by the private sector.
Right, okay.
So interesting.
It is so important, isn't
it? Yeah, and the government's this time round changed its policy quite considerably. Before, it was supporting BT a lot, and a lot of this money they're hoping is going to go to some of the alternative providers.
Yeah.
So
yeah, we've had alternative providers on the show, actually, haven't we? And they very much are about investing in local infrastructure.
Yeah.
They'll highlight hotspot areas where they bring fibre optic into, and then it's obviously cabled out from there. So that's really good.
I've led a project in Goudhurst in Kent.
Okay, yeah, which is very rural and faces the same issue.
And we've got a non-BT supplier there who's Kent-based. So
it's really good.
Been a good game.
Yep. And the other thing I've got, Dan, which I love this story, is about, do you know how to make extra money? Now, obviously, people have... No, not that way. Not that way at all.
Taxi driver.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's right. So we've got Uber.
Yep.
We've got Airbnb, so you can rent out your spare room, your settee, or maybe understairs cupboard. But also now we have rent out your loft.
Oh.
So a company called StashB have developed this app and system where you can publicise spare storage space, whether it's your garage, whether it's your loft, your upstairs cupboard, and actually people can link up with you and rent that space from you for a set period of time. And it's growing. There are already a couple of people into the market, and I actually think it's going to grow. There's another really clever one, is about if you're traveling, yes, well, we'll come to yours, and we'll come to yours, Nick, in a minute. There's another one that if you're traveling, you need to drop your bag somewhere for a couple of hours. Say you're, you know, backpacking around a city and you want to dump it. Well, there's shops now that can sign up via an app where you can just link up locally, you know, store your rucksack or whatever you've got, your diamonds or whatever, gold bullion or whatever you've got, and you can, yeah. So isn't that genius, Nick?
Well, I don't know, because how do they x-ray? I would think in London that's going to be a bit of a nightmare, but I don't know about other places. You'd think that there'd be some sort of security concern.
Yeah.
City Stasher is the company that are starting to look at it. So, you know, we'll see how things go.
I can't believe there's that much space in people's lofts.
Well, not everybody's a hoarder, Dan, like you. I mean, God knows what's in your loft.
I'm not like some crazy, you know.
Do you grow things in your loft?
Yeah. Cheese, mate.
Oh, right. Yeah. Do you hoard, Lorne? Are you a hoarder?
Oh, terrible.
Are you?
But books.
Really?
And my wife's clothes. It's taken us over.
Yeah. What is that with women? My wife's the same. I've never seen so many pairs of shoes, boots, handbags.
No, nothing gets
thrown out.
No, and you can't stop it. Next season comes in and nothing goes out.
Yeah, that's right. It's just one-way traffic. What about you, Nick?
Yeah, well, we moved back from the Middle East 3 years ago, and we still got about 20 boxes unpacked in our garage. So yes, we're awful.
Cut out the middleman, straight down the dump. Yeah, just don't bother opening them.
I'd like that. It's kids' stuff largely, so we're hanging on to it for other friends and family.
Yeah, but it'll never get opened. Yeah, it'll never get
opened. Don't hang on. Let it go.
Give it up. Anyway, as you can tell, we're having a really relaxed show today. So I'll introduce Lorne Mitchell. Lorne, you're from Objective Designers.
Yes.
So thank you so much for coming to join us. Tell us a little bit about Objective Designers and what the company's about.
Yeah, sure. So I suppose what it's about is what it says it's about. We try and help our clients clarify their objectives, and we also try and then help them find a way to achieve those objectives through different kinds of designs. And we mainly focus on the telecoms, media and tech sectors. So we do quite a lot with tech startups and some of the larger telcos particularly, which is my background, which sort of helped to pay some of the bills.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting at the moment, you know, that the whole sort of tech scene, there's lots of software, there's lots of bits of software lying around, particularly for companies. And what we find is that a lot of it doesn't really integrate very well, doesn't talk to everything.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So we've been doing quite a lot of research around that. And, you know, if a company, for instance, has a sales system and it wants to plug in a new marketing system, it's often actually quite a cumbersome thing. The two things don't talk to one another.
Right.
So we're doing quite a bit around that. And also trying to make things more interesting and fun. So we just started quite a large program around gamification, which was quite trendy about 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah,
and it sort of
yeah.
seems to have drifted away a bit.
Right.
But this whole idea of getting people engaged and excited and getting them understanding how the games industry actually works, not so much gaming, but the actual, you know, online gaming games industry. And there's some really kind of neat stuff there that you can fold into your own apps or into your own services that get people better engaged, more excited, remember you more often and use your services more.
So that's about developing gaming as a way to market or draw people into your sort of make you
that's
more
right.
visible, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not so much gaming, but you take components of what you see in games, you know, like tokens or at the basic level, and try and get people more engaged. And I think we're seeing that now with a lot of the sort of fitness devices. You know, they'll have a voice, it'll come in, it'll challenge you to go on a run, or whilst you're on the run, it says you're doing really well, you know, keep it going, you've only got 2 miles to go, and sort of things like that. So you actually use, you know, bots to actually encourage you to achieve your objectives. And I think it's a very exciting area.
Because it is about human nature being competitive, Dan, isn't it? I mean, it's about, I suppose...
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I mean, it's certainly with you know, running apps and things like that, there's loads of that sort of thing. I remember there was one that I trialled out once, and it was a story, and it was about being in a sort of apocalypse or zombie sort of world, and you had, there was a story that you did while you were running along.
Oh, cool.
And you were being chased by zombies and stuff, and you had to, you know, get certain speeds up and distances. It's amazing. You ought to try it, Steve.
I don't know what goes on in your world. I really don't. I have no idea. Why would you download something that means you're being chased by zombies?
Well, it was a bit like an interactive, you know, a book, and you know.
Yeah. Going back to Lorne, it is really difficult for tech companies to be seen, isn't it?
It is.
I think, you know, what advice would you give to tech companies?
Well, that's come on this radio show.
To promote yourself.
It is. I mean, there's so much stuff out there now. A lot of it is hidden. I mean, I think at each stage of a company's growth, you've got to have appropriate marketing for that stage of growth. I've seen companies who've done nothing and stayed in oblivion. I've seen others who've thrown far too much too early before they have a product.
Yeah.
So it's like a lot of things, you know, one of the most difficult things in running a small business is to get that timing right and not go too early and equally not go too late. And we've got this sort of strange phenomenon at the moment where people are kind of encouraged to go early to sort of build the brand before there's anything there. And giving stuff away as well. So it's not just about launching it, but how you get revenue back as opposed to just giving stuff away. I come from a slightly more conventional world where if you can grow at the sort of rough pace that you're getting money coming in through the door, then if you hit a few rough patches, you're going to survive. And I think that that's again part of the balance. So balancing your marketing with your product, with your revenue is a key part of any objective setting for me. If you haven't got those in balance, you know the engine's going to start to rattle and the car's going to fall to bits, whatever it is you're trying to do.
I mean, there's so many tech companies that are investing fortunes to get themselves noticed without actually having a very clear and simple funding stream.
Yes.
And I think that, how can that be sustainable for companies?
I think the other thing is, I mean, we can come on to it, but do something really, really niche, you know, that's valuable. Don't try and boil the ocean.
Yeah.
Again, I see a lot of that. You know, people come out, particularly if they've come out of a big business or something like that, and they think they can take on a lot. And it's actually, you know, everything takes a lot longer and takes more effort. So you've got to actually be very, very clear about what it is you're trying to do, you know, within a market. And I think start from home. That's another thing. I mean, I've got somebody I met about a year ago, and he was trying to sort of grow a global brand. And I said, actually, you lived in North London. Have you sort of just visiting 10 companies in your, you know, personas that you're trying to target that live 5 miles from you? And he did that, and the business took off. So often people are looking too far away. You know, some of the basics of business are really quite
simple
key.
Networking.
Yeah,
simple.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
On your website, you sort of have an approach for you deal with mainly service businesses.
Yeah.
You have the 7 keys.
Yeah.
Could you just, you know, sort of expand a bit more, describe to our listeners what that's about?
Yeah, sure. So I'm back to this balance idea. We've developed a way to look at a business, if you like, through 7 different lenses. Mm-hmm. And each lens has a colour. And it's very useful for business planning. I've used it with a number of clients where you actually go through each of the colors. So purple is product, blue is marketing and sales, green is service delivery, manufacturing, if you do it around the circle. If you go on the website, you can see it. And actually, when you create a business plan for a service company, if you hit those 7 keys, you're pretty much there in terms of creating a business plan that you can take to a bank or some investors. And you can actually run it in a day and come up with some very valuable output. And if you're doing it with the team as well, even if you've got external people who support you, if you do it with them, you get a fantastic interaction with the kind of colours. Mm. And you create a game. So that's what I've done with it. We our new strapline, we just rebranded it as Game Your Plan, and actually take your plan and make a game out of it. And then it's about engagement again. You're getting the people involved with delivering that plan much better engaged. And we've developed some games around business planning, which is probably about the driest thing you can think of doing in a business, but it's really important.
It's so important, but boy, is it so boring to actually make yourself sit down and be disciplined enough to record it, lay it out, and in a very staged process. But it sounds like the game's a really good idea.
It is, and I'm not sure if it was Churchill or Eisenhower, both are quoted with the quote, but the idea is, you know, the plan is nothing, it's insignificant, but planning is everything. And if you can game the whole planning process, you can, you know, have a lot of fun and deliver something much more valuable.
Yeah, Nick, have you planned much?
It's a constant bane of my life.
See?
Planning much, yes, yes. It's all ringing very true to sort of my experience, what you're saying. So absolutely, it's you always having to stand back, try and prioritize things, reprioritize, you know, cash flow, all the usual things. And then, you've got to work it all through and things change radically all the time. So, yeah.
And that's the other thing, Lorne, isn't it? And that's a really good point, Nick, about the plan has to be flexible enough to accommodate
absolutely
changes and change of direction.
Sure. So we tend to take three scenarios, very different, and can game them out. And that gives you a lot more flexibility in the plan itself. And you learn from that. So one can be a competitive threat. One can be a... So I've got one client at the moment we're going through that wants to shut the business down. So that's one of the scenarios. But actually they're finding, going through that scenario, they're learning an awful lot about how much pain that would cause them. Mm. So they're,
And the other thing we see, and obviously we're going to talk to Nick a little bit later on, is a lot of companies start with one tech idea or one tech direction, and then it just moves or it...
Yeah.
Bursts or
pivoting, I think it's called.
And we see that all the time, Dan, don't we?
You hear people talking about it a lot.
And this is a useful exercise when you pivot, because there are certain things you want to carry forward, certain things you want to stop.
Yeah.
And being clear about that, and being clear in terms of your objectives about what you're actually trying to do, and then working out how, what it is you're doing, your activities, achieve that. I have another thing called value over effort. And if the thing is more valuable than the effort it's required to put into it, do it. And if the thing isn't valuable and you have to put a lot of effort into it, just stop doing it. And that's actually a really handy thing at the beginning of every day to just have a checklist. You know, what's the value of effort on this particular activity?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about what else are you working on at the moment? You talked about the gamification.
Yeah, so we're also doing quite a bit of work on a new law that's coming through called GDPR, which is going to be around data protection. It's an EU law, European law, and interestingly enough, even in the UK, we think we've Brexited already, but it's still pretty, well, it's very relevant to the UK. We won't have Brexited by, I think it's May 2018, and it's going to put a lot of pressure back on people who are laying out policy and also processing data, so the sort of data processors. And it's going to be law in terms of fines and things like that. So quite a lot of the bigger companies are waking up to it. Smaller companies, I think, in the IT tech sector are perhaps not so aware of it.
And this is a requirement around protection of personal data and information.
That's right. And also the permission that person is giving the company who's processing the data.
Right.
So you find with a lot of cloud apps, there's just an assumption that you put data in and that's it. It isn't in this new law.
Okay.
You know, as a user of a system, you'll be able to first of all understand what data is being used or is being stored about you. And if you want to stop that data being stored about you, then the company itself, the service provider, has to actually just delete that data. And a lot of these data service or these services, particularly out of the US, just aren't that strong on that particular angle. So, you know, with the so the breakdown of the safe harbor last year, this whole area is really up in the air. And I think Europe's taking the lead on it. And I think it's a lot of opportunity for European companies to get good at this stuff and perhaps add, you know, quite a lot of value to the sort of the way we manage data.
Do you see the market going on along the lines of, you know, I'm a service provider. I do gather quite a lot of data information on my service users. There is a plugin that I will ensure I've got that will help me manage the data
and cleanse
it accordingly.
Sure, I think there'll be lots of different technology options. Plugins may well be one. But I think it goes back to the earlier conversation we had about sort of storage and clutter. I think it's going to force people to be much clearer about where data is stored, how long it's stored for, under what conditions it can be stored or deleted, and giving we as consumers of these services much more control over what happens to that data. And I'm doing some work in Germany at the moment. They're driving a lot of this and are, you know, pretty fed up with Snowden and the way that a lot of the data was snooped on without them knowing. And so I think we're going to see, over the next 3 or 4 years, this whole area becoming very, very interesting. And as I say, I think there are lots of tech solutions to solve the problem. But fundamentally, it's going to require business owners who have platforms with data on it to think hard about those rules.
I mean, it's about process management, data management.
Yeah. But it's you know, it needs thinking about. And if there are tech companies out there who haven't heard of it, or you know, look up GDPR on the internet and find out more about it.
And when does that? When do you think that's going to come into statute?
It comes into law in May. I think it's 26 or something. I think that's right, in 2018. So it's
not long.
About 15 months away. Yeah,
which is not 16 long. 16 months so. Away. Yeah, great.
It really does sound like something companies need to start thinking about now and getting on board.
Definitely.
So I understand that you've worked sort of across Europe, into the Middle East and in Africa. Mm. And just going back to sort of, you know, your sort of consultancy, I'm just wondering if there's common, you know, if there's common errors across, you know, lots of organisations that they're doing, you know, that they need help, you know, should be thinking about before, you know, whatever they're doing, or if there's like differences between each of the different, you know, sort of areas, you know, sort of within sort of the Middle East and Europe or anything like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, different cultures definitely are always fascinating. And I think we'll come on with Nick, but you know, you go to a new city or something like that, and I went with my wife to Morocco earlier this year, you know, suddenly a completely different culture. So culture is very important. I think there is a sort of international business culture as well. I think people tend to conform. I think if you're a natural English speaker, it's somewhat easier. As I say, across Europe, you know, a lot of people are very, very good at speaking English, but it's not always their first language. But yeah, I think things take a bit longer. Things take a bit sort of more time. But I think just an acceptance that, you know, people are different, and that business gets done, you know, within the context of two different cultures, and studying that culture before you go and sort of hit it. I mean, we did some work in Nigeria, which has a very different business culture from this country, you know, for instance. I wish someone had told me at the beginning, in that culture, people don't pay their bills. This is a kind of cultural thing.
I quite like that culture.
Yeah. Or if they do, they never pay the last bill. And so we ended up with a contract where we got to a point where the last bill became quite a contentious issue. And of course, what they do in Nigeria is they load the contract,
front load,
so they
everything.
Assume that the last bill won't get paid. I didn't get to know that. So there are sort of simple business rules that it's quite handy to know when you go into a country. But most countries are seen to be sort of evening out. I mean, I don't know. It'd be interesting with Brexit to see how that changes.
Yeah, and whether we will have a broader reach for our services and technology.
Yeah.
Have you found it difficult, Nick, working across lots of different countries?
Not so far.
No.
I think we've got a pretty good network, and we know the people who are representing us in each of these cities. So far it's been quite easy. The biggest difficulty has been the time difference.
I can imagine.
Like last night, I got back up from a night out about midnight, and I got a call
from a customer. How irresponsible.
I know.
Just before a radio show,
I know.
Going out.
I blame you. this is what you do, apparently.
Yeah.
but I got a call when I was slightly inebriated about midnight from a customer saying, she hadn't heard from us, and was the tour still going ahead tomorrow in New York? And I was like, okay, I better get on this when I get back.
Yeah.
But yeah,
great.
But yeah, that's been the only big issue so far.
So, Lorne, where can people go to get more information about your company?
Well, we've got a website, which is Objective Designers. It's a bit of a mouthful. Objective, as in goal, designers, designers.com. It's all one word. You'll see a bit more about the colours of the different parts of the business on there. And if you've got any thoughts or that, just send us something on the contact form.
Great. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
I hope you're going to hang around, because we now have got this.
Okay, we've got the unboxing segment. So I'm sure this box is getting bigger each week.
Harry's big box.
Harry's big box.
Harry's on Periscope.
Okay, this is throwing me a little bit of a...
Oh, that's a lovely rose.
So producer Chris...
This is how cheap they are, Dan. Look.
I know, look at that.
It's got a discount voucher on it. It was obviously £1. End of line.
£1.85. So in the box so far has been a potted rose.
Yeah.
Plant.
Which is looking a bit worse for wear.
And I've got another, clear plastic box. Okay. Oh, no.
Oh, this is looking interesting. Hang on. I assume that the rose is part of the actual...
It does. Right, okay. So we've got a plant, and we've got a device that says it monitors your plant's health. Parrot Flower Power, a wireless plant monitor.
A wireless plant monitor.
So it's in a clear plastic carton, some nice colourful image on the back. I'm putting on Periscope now.
Okay. It looks like a cartoon plant pot to me.
Yeah, it looks like, yeah, it does look like a cartoon plant pot with some sort of blue stick in it, blue plastic
okay,
stick.
Okay, this is where we can't get the wrapping undone, a bit like Christmas. So Dan's just opening the box. As I say, it's a funny colour blue. It's almost like a cartoony type thing, really. So it's a clear plastic box. You can hear him rattling around there.
It's not an easy box to...
No, so chuck the box away. Yeah. Is there, I suppose there's instructions.
I'm just looking. Actually, it might be in... No, it's just a bit of card, I think.
Yeah, chuck it over. Yeah,
you can have a look at that.
You describe what you've got.
Okay, so I've got the device. It's in a sort of cardboard plant pot. Oh, okay. There looks like there are some instructions and a battery in here. this is going to end well, isn't it?
Is it switched on?
It hasn't got a battery in it at the moment.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see if we can find out how to put the battery in.
So Dan's going to put.
So it looks like it's like a seed pack. Oh, and these aren't easy to get out. Oh,
Dan. You've let yourself down. You've let your family down.
What,
Come on again. Oh, he's dropped it.
Hang
now.
On, do we have to hand this back?
Yeah, is it going back? Harry, what are we doing with it?
I might have a fit.
So I'll read a little bit off the box while Dan's...
Look at the instructions.
How can it possibly be that big? This thing, it's got like three bits to it.
Yeah.
So it's like an A2 sheet that's been folded by an origami master.
So I take off one of the twigs.
Okay.
Okay, and put the battery in.
So the battery's going in.
Somehow, yeah, okay.
And then I'm going to get my Bluetooth open, because apparently it is Bluetooth enabled.
Unlock here.
So let's have a little look.
Take off the cardboard to get the device out.
Okay. Is the light on, Dan?
Have you reading the instructions?
Yeah, I always read the instructions.
Yeah, Dan's thrown the instructions away. I'm looking for it. I cannot see it. It's not visible at the moment, mate. Dan's wading through the instructions. So... Nick and Lorne, are you a big plant keeper? Do you like plants?
Yeah, I love plants.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll get you to have a look in a second. Nick?
Not that excited.
No, no, I agree with you. I'm not a great... I've basically killed anything I've ever had. No, I'm still not discoverable, but I will try again. Pass it round, Dan.
I think I put this in the plant pot, so now I'm going to unwrap the plant.
It goes in. We have got the combined might of four very high-tech brains in this studio.
I wonder
plus
why
Harry, obviously.
I wonder why it's blue and not green.
I suppose so. It stands out, do you think?
I don't know.
Are you trying to pair up with it?
Yeah, I am trying to pair, and it's just not seeing it. Yeah. Is it actually switched on? There was a light on top. Is the light on?
Well, I can't seem to find any sort of...
Or maybe there's a current flow between the two prongs when you stick it in. I don't know. Give it a go. All I know, Dan, is you are failing miserably today.
I'd just like to thank producer Chris for this wonderful...
Yeah, without...
It's going to be flashing green. Is it green now?
Yeah, it hasn't flashed anything,
It's not, really.
Is the battery the right way?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I did check the battery
the wrong way around.
No, I think that could well be.
I follow the instruction.
Most of these things never work, and it's always down to Dan. He always gets it wrong.
Oh, I'm hurt by that.
Right, have we got a flashing thing?
Oh, it's flashing.
It's flashing. Hang on.
Okay.
Right.
Maybe I hadn't tightened that up. Okay.
Other devices is whirring. I have the wheel of death in front of me, and I'll turn Bluetooth off.
I'm looking at Harry in case he knows. Is there an app that you're meant to download with this?
Possibly. Right. Possibly. Oh, God. Here we go. Oh, yeah. You need Parrot Cat.
Download the application.
Oh.
Log into the App Store and download the free Parrot Flower Power application.
Well, there we go. And we haven't got that. So, basically, we have no idea. You can tell everybody was out on their Christmas do, and it was just like, oh, what should we get?
I wasn't out on mine. Well, hang on, did you guys all go out on a Christmas do?
Yeah, without you. Yeah, didn't you get the memo?
No, I didn't.
Oh, Dan.
Again.
Oh, yeah, that was again, didn't it? Yeah.
Text from producer Chris to say this is my fault because I've wanted the plant sensor in for months.
It's because he wants to give it to his mum for Christmas. That's what
I hope he's not giving his mum that rose.
Well,
could you explain a little bit about what it's about?
Yeah, Harry, the mic's up, so come and join us at the desk. So, yeah.
Right, so what it's supposed to do is you put it into the plant pot, and then with the app, which we should have had, you can monitor like the soil density, the health of the plant, things like that, just to make sure that you're not killing your plants, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing. So, how much do we think it's actually worth?
For me, it's priceless.
Priceless.
I would say it's going to be about £15. Oh, I'm getting £5. I'm going to say ten.
Nick, what would you pay for that?
It's not particularly pretty, is it?
No,
I think I probably wouldn't pay anything for that.
No,
frankly.
Okay, I'm with you on that one, Lorne.
Well, I'm just downloading the app.
Are you? Oh, great.
I am. I've managed to get onto the app. It's quite a nice app. It's got quite a nice lot of colours on it and everything. So it's taking a while to download. I don't know. I'm rather in agreement. I suppose I wouldn't pay much more than £10 for that.
No. Also, if you had lots of plants, you'd need lots of them, wouldn't you?
So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking a tenner. So, Harry, how much?
It is £30 from Currys.
Holy moly.
£30?
Yeah. Oh. It's not going to be on your Christmas list then.
Right, so...
Okay, so...
Is it... what we do is always grade it, so it's either it rocks or back in the box. So it rocks is I keep it.
I'd like
in the box, it's a no from me. So, Dan...
I'd like to add a third option, which is put it in the bin.
Put it in the bin?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So go on, what were you going to do?
Put it in the bin.
Put it in the bin.
Put it in the bin.
Put it in the bin. Harry, come on.
It rocks.
What, for £30? Lorne.
I'd give it back to the person who gave it to me. If it was a present.
It would definitely go back in the box for me. I could think of far better things to spend my £30 on than that, really. So, yeah. So, unfortunately, that's it, Harry. It's not just a no, it's a big no. So anyway, great. So thank you so much for that, Dan. That was really, really good.
My pleasure.
We're going to go to a pre-record now, which is a short segment about fire safety for businesses, which Kent Fire and Rescue helped us with. Now, we're joined by Lou and Phil from Kent Fire and Rescue. So how come Kent Fire and Rescue are here at a business-to-business event?
Well, Kent Fire and Rescue Service are here at a business-to-business event because we're part of the business engagement team. So we're here to try and help businesses understand a lot of legislation that they either don't know exists or don't understand. And it's a free service that we provide. And we're basically trying to get our name out there so people know the options that are available to them, so that they know we exist, and so that they know we know also how to connect with them through social media platforms as well.
So you... you advise businesses about how to stay safe, and what's the most common fault you see, or what's the most thing that businesses say to you? I don't know about that, or I didn't know about that.
Quite often we get asked questions about fire extinguishers. That's the common one, but a lot of the time people don't realise that they have to have a fire risk assessment now instead of a fire certificate. Despite the fact that things changed a long time ago, we are still getting questions about that. So that's why we're here, is to give that knowledge, give that understanding, and be as much help as possible.
So I'm a small company. I employ 7 people, let's say, in a small little unit. What must I do to keep myself safe?
You must have a fire risk assessment. So if you employ 5 or more people, then you do have to record it. Even if you employ less than that, we suggest you do anyway, just to cover yourself more than anything. If it's a simple premises, you don't necessarily have to have an all-singing, all-dancing alarm system, but have a look at the risks that you've got. Just take note of the things that you might see every single day and actually think to yourself, what implications could that have on us as a business? Because it can affect you. If you have an incident, it's not just obviously the initial being shut down for a short period of time while you recover. It could be long term as well, because your business, your customers could be going elsewhere and finding other people to supply for you. So we're all about helping small and medium businesses stay in business for longer.
So if I do a simple risk assessment, what key areas should I look at? Obviously we talked about extinguishers, but what else should I make sure is in my risk assessment?
There's 5 simple steps for a fire risk assessment, which can be found on our website. So you have a look at the people who are especially at risk, so any people that are particularly vulnerable. So if you've got a shop that is designed for people that children, so you've got to think about pushchairs, you've got to think about young children, you've got to think about babies, pregnant ladies. So look at your people at risk that are in and around your business. And then you have to look at different things such as your significant findings. So what are your risks? So do you have heaters? Do you have central heating? Because obviously central heating is obviously less of a risk than mobile heaters. And it's about if you've got a workshop as well, if you're using hot works, where are you using them? Do you have acetylene on site? So it really is catering to, dependent on your business.
And what... If I do need a risk assessment, can I do it myself or have I got to get a consultant? Phil?
No, you can do it yourself, very much so. It's quite an easy process to do. There are companies out there that will do it for you at a chargeable rate. We can come in, do a free advice visit for you, and we can give you some steps and hints and tips of how to write one. It does sometimes take a little bit of time, however, it is quite an easy process if you just take your time and think about it.
And there's lots of advice out there. Whereabouts would I go on Kent Fire and Rescue's website? Is there a particular section I need to look out for?
If you head to the business safety section, which is on the main page, so if you head there, there's lots about our free seminars, our networking events, and if you come along to one of our seminars, our next one's actually in Dover on November the 16th. And we go through in detail about the five steps of a fire risk assessment. We talk through everything. But if you're not local to Dover, then there are 10 that we do over the county as well.
And they're all free, no charge of that at all?
All free, no charge at all.
Excellent. You talked a little bit about where a business has an incident. It can really, really affect a business. And I was actually visiting somewhere yesterday where they had a major fire. And it actually took them 6 months to get back into their factory. And they nearly actually went bust. Is that something you give advice about as well?
Not within our team per se, but we do have people that go out and speak to the inspectors, go out and speak to the businesses afterwards. We look at the local area. When we have our free seminars, we do talk about business continuity as well. So if you do have an incident, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a fire, we talk about things such as businesses being hacked. We talk about things like strikes that might influence you as well, and we try and help businesses to think outside the box as well.
So, but it's the key part is about planning and making sure you've got a business continuity plan so that if something does happen, your business is not going to be at risk.
That's exactly right. Planning and preparation prevents poor performance.
Oh yeah, I've heard that before. Yeah, great. Anyway, thank you so much for joining me, guys. That's Lou and Phil from Kent Fire and Rescue. Thank you. So there we go, a business planning. We've had a terrible guilt trip during that pre-record about how brutal we were about the plant monitoring thing, particularly Dan. We all think Dan was a little bit too.
I am brutal.
In the bin. But Lorne has rightly told us to have a look at the app.
Yeah, the app's great.
It's actually not bad at all, is it?
No, and actually I can understand why you said what you did because you didn't see the app, but the app's got... indoor plants, flowering plants, fruit and veg, and each one you can choose between things that go in the shade, partial shade or sun.
And that will monitor all of those.
Yeah, and it gives you, you know, the names. So if you're going on a, you know, you want to get particularly keen and know what the scientific name for a rose is, it's Rosa hybris, this thing, and it gives the description and facts and colours and height and... what birds and things get attracted to.
Sounds
so I mean
good.
It's a rich application.
And there's a lot of work gone into
that. I felt sorry for the designer of the pot because the pot's only part of the picture.
Yeah.
So I'd probably keep it having seen that.
Now you've said that, Nick, I think it's going in the box anyway, so it's not going to change anything. right, Nick Whitfield. Nick, you're from City Unscripted. Now, I love to travel and I love to see and get below the sort of the normal tourist things.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your company and how that could help me.
Yeah, well, no, that's exactly what we're about. So, you know, I've done a lot of travel. Everybody travels loads these days. City travel in particular is growing really, really rapidly.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do is really get people to have a very, very authentic experience, to really immerse themselves in the city.
Yeah.
And I think the way we're trying to do that is by trying to replicate the sort of experience we all have when we've got a friend in the city who knows the city really well and knows you really well and can sort of put stuff together so that you have the sort of experience that they know you're going to really enjoy. And so we do that by, we built a large network of locals, local hosts. You know, we've got 500 plus at the moment in 13 cities. And so they range from 18 to 60 plus.
Right.
We've got actors, musicians, professionals, stay-at-home parents, all these sort of people who do it in their spare time because they love to show people around their city. So we meet all of them. We try and get a lot of variety on the site for each of the cities so that people can then go through the different profiles, use the filters that we have, and then find somebody that they can be really confident that, you know, they'll have fun with, or they'll get really relevant advice. So we really are pushing the authenticity really, really hard. You know, we're not just one of those companies that say we're providing a local experience. We really want to do that. It's the sort of travel I've always wanted.
Me too.
And I think, you know, it's working really well so far for us.
I mean, I went to Hanoi and I did a trip right from the top of Vietnam to the bottom. And we used lots of different transport. First day, we landed at 8 o'clock. We had a guide organised for like 9:30 as soon as we got to, because we were on all different time shop, you know, all gone. And the most important thing he did for us is get us to the mobile phone shop and actually managed to get us a pay-as-you-go mobile phone, set us up.
You got low expectations.
Yeah, we did. That was the first thing. No, it was worth its weight in gold, because then it just saved us fortunes. And then he took us to some fantastic local places that we would never, ever have seen.
Yeah.
You know, like a couple of local markets which were right off the beaten track. And also he knew the timings of things. He knew what would be going at certain times and what wouldn't. And then he took us to a fantastic restaurant, which, you know, we were just with local people right off the tourist route. And it was amazing. I suppose there's a number of things. There's a sort of the visiting things, experiencing things, whether it's sport or other things. And then you've got the food aspect of it as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. You know, we've got people who have real interests in art and culture. Shopping is another big one. Yeah, food and drink is obviously a really big one for most people, I think. So there's a big range of interests that people have, and that's why we're trying to cater to all of those types of things.
So where did you start first? What city?
London. So we started in London. Right, yeah. Okay. So yeah, I've been working full time for about 2 years now, but the team only has really grown since sort of February. We did some crowdfunding that closed through Crowdcube in January.
Yeah.
So we've been growing the team to it's about six of us now. And we've launched in 12 other cities, mostly in Europe, but also New York and San Francisco and Tokyo outside of Europe.
Okay. So people, talk us through the process of how you actually access your services or access local guiding.
Yeah, so you go to cityunscripted.com and then you have a choice of the cities, the 13 cities. You click on the city you want. It takes you to that page. You have a number of filters, so you can filter by what they're good, you know, what you're looking for, basically, what sort of thing you're looking for. Is it nightlife? Is it shopping? Is it history, culture, whatever it is? And then it'll give you a choice of, it depends where it is, but in London, we've got about 120 locals. So it'll filter those down. You can then click on the ones you like the look of. I'll be careful with my words. That's not the sort of site we are.
And that's exactly, that's important, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's ridiculous sometimes. People just think everything's about either dating or you know, hooking up or whatever. And, it, you know,
I think that's just their, you know, they're hopeful.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. And we've also got some quite attractive people on the site as well. So we just need to be a little bit careful about that. But so then they just look, and then the availability is all listed there. And if, you know, people can just book them from 1 hour to multiple hours to multiple days, depending on their availability.
Right, okay.
And then they get in touch, and we help them through the process. So it's a managed marketplace. It's not totally open. You know, we do interview all the hosts that we have.
So you've got the security bit is that you're controlling who comes in and asks for whatever and actually where they're going to seek that service from.
Yeah, so we handhold both ways. You know, obviously from the local host, they've got to be comfortable and confident that we're going to give them somebody that we're confident isn't going to do anything bad to them, and vice versa. So, you know, I think it was a big part of the business for us that we do interview them all, they are vetted and they are insured by us. And, you know, we have other competitors who don't do that. And for me, it's a really big thing. You know, our customers are largely people who are pretty time poor. And so they go away and they've got 3 days, 72 hours often or something like that. And they what they don't want is to have 3 hours wasted with somebody that isn't suitable.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah. So once someone's on the site and they've put the filters in, I presume that sort of finding a local guide, you know, you're going to be choosing sort of similar interests and ideas because you're going to be one. Can you sort of chat, either email or phone, sort of talk to a number of different guys to find out which ones are more on your wavelength, or
we don't offer that at the moment. What we do offer is there's what we call a perfect local. So people can just book that, and then we talk directly to the customer, and we find out exactly the sort of interest they have, what they're looking for.
Okay.
And then we know our locals pretty well, so then we give them a couple of choices, and then so we take out the thought for them if they don't want to do that, which a lot of people don't.
Yeah.
So I assume you've visited all of, did you say 12 locations?
13.
So I assume you've visited all 13.
Not yet. I think I have, but not in my work capacity. So
I'm going to put you on the spot. What would be your favourite ultimate activity to undertake in one of those cities, and where?
Ooh, I guess New York. I haven't been to New York for a number of years now.
Okay.
I think I'd love to go around Harlem with somebody who knows Harlem really well, a musician, maybe a jazz musician.
Yeah.
And hang out in a bar afterwards with them.
Yeah.
That for me would be pretty cool.
Lorne, what would be your ultimate city experience? What would you like?
Oh, that's really interesting. I'm just trying to I really want to go to Japan. Yeah. I've never been there.
Yeah.
And I'd like to meet somebody who is really arty and into sort of Japanese Zen culture.
Yeah.
And get their perspective on Tokyo or Mount Fuji, even better.
Yeah.
Somewhere sort of sacred to that ancient Japanese culture. I find that whole sort of Zen part of Japan fascinating. So that'd be my choice.
Harry, where would you go? And don't say the local pub.
London.
A football. that's
going to be my answer.
Hong Kong. Okay. Going there, something like that, that'd be good.
Yeah. Obviously Singapore, Hong Kong.
Yeah, it's all quite, there's a lot of tech there, isn't there, as well.
Sure.
So, that'd be a good place to go.
Dan?
Yeah, I agree with Nick. I mean, I'd love to go to New York, but I really want to go to Berlin, but I've just not been yet, which is rubbish because it's so close.
Yeah, it's not far, is
no,
it?
No, I'm an idiot. I'm admitting it here.
It's not the first time or the last time, mate.
I'm getting in before you. But my girlfriend's going to San Francisco early next year. So
without you?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Time away for good behaviour.
Do you cover San Francisco?
We do. Yes.
Oh, great. Yeah. Well, we're going there in March. So, we'll use you. Sounds great. Love to do that because we're not there for very long. I think what you've got sounds ideal, actually.
Thank you.
I think that's
please
great.
Try it.
Yeah. I think, Nick, it's about maximising your time because, city break, normally, those sort of places, you might have 2-3 days. You're not really going to get into the local feel or what the local scenes are.
Yeah.
And yours is an excellent way to do that, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, the main go-to site has been TripAdvisor for years and years. And, I think that's, people still use it. Obviously, it's the number one travel site, but at the same time, how much do we really trust it? And it's zero personalization in there. So, how can 1,000 people, that you don't know, how can you trust them for their opinion?
Also, it's skewed by more popularist approach. So it's not necessarily about quality can come to the top. It's actually what's the most popular, what could be the most trendy, what can be the most, in thing at the moment. Actually, necessarily can't be the most local or the most authentic.
Yeah.
I think that's the difference, isn't it?
Yeah, and everything moves so fast as well. So, you've got 1,000, if it takes on new ownership or something, then things can change very rapidly, but that doesn't necessarily get reflected on something like that.
No.
How do you reassure female travellers in terms of safety and stuff like that?
Just say, you'll be okay. No, so with females, if we don't allow groups of men or even individual men. So if the girl is showing somebody around, then it has to be a mixed group,
right?
Okay,
unless we can get very comfortable and get them very comfortable that they're going to be fine.
And what's the normal? As you say, so you could book an hour or two, a four-hour block or a whole day? Is that how it works?
Yeah, I mean, it's just multiple hours, so anything okay. 1 hour up. So we want to keep it flexible, and people can start, you know, select whatever time they want it to start as well. So
brilliant. And then you said you went for some crowdfunding recently.
Yes.
How was that as an experience? Amazing. Was it hard?
It was... Yeah, it was different to what I was expecting, but I guess I probably should have done a bit more research because subsequently I've spoken to lots of people who've had the same sort of experience.
Right.
I think it's a great platform for marketing yourself,
yep.
But it still relies on you having a very strong network.
Yeah.
You know, you need to bring most of the money to the party yourself.
Yeah.
But it's a great platform. You know, it gives you a strict timetable. It sort of brings authenticity to the whole thing.
Yeah.
It gives you the legal structure as well, but above all, I think it's just the marketing for me.
So what advice would you give to anybody else who's considering crowdfunding or other sorts of funding?
It really just depends on what kind of business it is. I think for the people like Crowdcube and Seeders, it's, although they're sort of starting to change direction a bit, I think it's largely the sort of big, you know, the big consumer type businesses. So we fit quite well into that because of the travel. Everybody loves to travel.
Yeah.
For the less sort of appealing, you know, immediately appealing consumer type products, I think you've got to look at the more serious sites, so like the Syndicate Room perhaps or others similar to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, I think the number one question is, you know, what is your network like? Because, you know, the crowd doesn't come to the party until you've brought a lot of that money yourself.
Yeah, and a lot of the funding is because of a particular individual is part of the business and actually they've got credibility and a track record as well.
That helps massively. Yeah. And I was talking to the guys yesterday and that one of their most successful crowd raises was for, I think it was called Zing Zing, and I think is a Chinese restaurant business in London. They had a couple of restaurants and they're MSG free and all this very healthy sort of stuff. But I think they're only trying to raise, I think, a couple of $100,000. And one of their customers was actually the vice chairman of Goldman Sachs. And he invested, and they found out that he had invested. And then they got his permission to tell everybody. And then
that was it.
And then it overfunded by like 4,000%.
Really?
Yeah. Wow.
So bringing in credible investors
changes
things radically.
Yeah. I mean, I know, Lorne, you're a great advocate of the research and development tax credits because you've used that to raise cash.
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah, that helps a lot of companies.
Yeah, it does.
It?
Yeah, the only challenge with that is it's sort of, it's not cash up front. So you have to be very clear what your cash flow forecast looks like and then balance, you know, short-term loans and other kinds of money with longer term.
So you have to spend out, but then you get the tax credit back off.
You just don't end up paying the government the tax.
Which is always a nice thing, yeah.
Over time, that obviously accrues, but you know, if you need short-term funding to fund some project or something, then that's different. And I think, it's an interesting world of, you know, because often you find people are pushing their own particular product or service to the detriment. So banks will push loans and some of these crowdfunding platforms might push their own.
Yeah.
But you've got to be clear what kind of money you want at what stage of the development cycle.
And for your business, Nick, it obviously helped you expand, I assume.
What, the crowdfunding?
Yeah, it does, yeah. So where next? Where are you looking?
We're going back to crowdfunding very seriously.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah, now that we've got quite a lot of traction in the business, we need to raise quite a bit more money. And
is that to extend your geographical network or the services you provide?
A bit of both, okay. mostly geographical, and also just in terms of marketing and people.
Yep.
So we're trying to push through B2C, but also B2B2C, so partnerships with accommodation providers, etc.
Okay.
But obviously you need people to manage those. We just need the money for that growth, and we're expecting, you know, to be in 100 cities by the end of 2017, so we're pretty ambitious.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it sounds really, really good. Isn't it? Where can we look for more information?
Cityunscripted.com.
And I assume there's an app. Is there an app? There's always an app.
Don't make that assumption. the app will be coming in 2017.
Yeah, once the crowdfunding's in place.
Oh, that's, yeah, we want to do that because we actually want to do the Uber type book a local. So for each of the cities, people can see where the locals are within, you know, 50 feet.
Because also that can be spontaneous. I mean, I went to LA and I spent a little bit of time in some of the various areas around LA, and I loved going to the LACMA, I think, which is the modern art museum there. And it would have been great to try to link up with local people who know more about the history and what's behind the, what there is there.
Yeah, so that I think that's how people operate largely, isn't it? So many of us are really bad at planning, and you know, you just think about it when you're there.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's what we're gonna that's what we're gonna focus on for next year as
well. Yeah. So it's, as you say, it's almost like booking an Uber, but in a way, you're booking a guide for an hour or two to just go and look at something.
Yeah, you can just have a coffee and just talk about what they should be doing. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, it's really.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I went to Cape Town as well once. Sounds like I've been loads of places, but I haven't really. But I went to Cape Town once and I spent some time with their fire and rescue service.
Okay.
And of course, because they're really local people, they live in the community and whatever else. Amazing. He said, oh, come on, we'll go out for an afternoon. And we went to all the different districts in Cape Town, saw some of the real local stuff, went to some of the informal settlements. But it was completely off the beaten track, and it was absolutely amazing to do stuff like that as well.
Yeah, yeah. People make a city, don't they? So
yeah, and the stories they had and talked about what went on. So that was great. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
To hear. And thank you both of you. It's been a great to hear what you're doing and just to chat. So, yeah. It's good, Dan, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Harry's with us. What's happening social media-wise, Harry? What's going on?
Well, there is one news story which I want to mention in just a moment. But before I do so, we have another competition on the Tech Talk Twitter page, which is giving away the beanie with the Bluetooth speakers from last week.
The Where's Wally... Dan wore it, beanie.
That's it.
It's probably still got a bit of Dan sweat on it.
Yeah.
Have I gone too far?
Usually.
There's a few nits in there when I tried it.
Are we going to disinfect it in some way or do something?
Yeah, we'll announce the winner tomorrow and we'll give it a deep clean before we get it sent over.
Yeah, yeah.
However, there is one story. It's on BBC, so it's okay to say.
Is it really?
Well, maybe. There's a debate about the future of robots that you can make love to.
I saw that story and I discounted it from my opening.
So did I, Harry.
Yeah.
But because of this...
When's it coming out of the box?
Yeah.
There's been a poll on Twitter about it in light of this debate. And the three options are yes, no, or try it once. And what would you reckon the most frequent answer has been to
it
that?
It has to be try it once.
It's a mixture of yes and try it once. So, obviously that's got a lot of people on social media very excited. There's obviously it's a bit of a debate because morally and in terms of data protection as well. I'm not really sure where that comes into it. But
no. I'm thinking I've got this vision of humans, you know, the TV thing, humans.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm sort of thinking.
Yeah, Westworld as well. That's
Westworld. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we like Westworld. Have you been watching it?
No.
Oh, right. Okay. Have you got television?
I think so.
You probably watch things like, I don't know, knitting?
Yeah, I love a bit of knitting. Crochet mainly.
Arts and crafts type thing.
Yep, garden as well.
Garden as well. Any other news on Twitter?
There was just one thing I noticed today. It's not so much social media, but VR.
Yeah.
Obviously, Christmas coming up. Well, very close. It's expected that by the end of Christmas, 10% of homes will have a VR headset in it, or more than one VR headset. And that's double what there would have been last Christmas.
Yeah.
So it's been the year of VR this year.
Absolutely. VR, PS4, having that availability, it's in your front room now. And I think it's just going to grow and grow and grow.
Definitely.
So great. Anyway, we could have VR city visits, couldn't we?
No.
That would negate your business. Yeah. Anyway, thank you so much, both of you, for joining us. It's been really great. And hopefully we'll catch up again soon. So thank you very much.
Great. Thanks very much.
Brilliant. Thank you.